Medical Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 200 years of the Bon Secours mission.
Now, a very warm welcome to Karina Evans, who joins us in studio. Karina is a physiotherapist based here in Tralee, and she has very kindly stepped in for Eamon Shanahan this week. Welcome, Karina.
Thank you, Deirdre, and thank you for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure, always. You did such a great job the last time we had to bring you back. We're going to talk about a lot of things, and actually I'm quite happy to see that there's quite a few questions in for you already. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to ask you at the outset about some of the things you're seeing in your clinics at the moment, because you were just telling me before you came in you're seeing a lot of gardening injuries.
That's true, yeah, that's true. And I've been listening now for the last while, and my own idea of heaven, if you're interested, is with my shovel outside digging in my garden. I can't think of anything I like better.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. But to that end, this time of the year, people who are I will be out there on a November day, even in the dark, you know, my family think it's hilarious with a headlamp on my head. But my thought is it's cheaper than a psychiatrist, and it's the one thing that keeps me outside. So this time of the year, people who even have a bit of a patio outside their door will fill a pot and put a few petunias in it, you know, or a geranium or something. Or you'll see the gorgeous plants even in the supermarket coming out, and you'll be tempted to put something in a window box. So you don't have to have a huge area to be inspired by the garden at this time of the year. However, that in itself does bring problems to my door. More particularly, I think, more than anything else, back problems would be the thing, because of the sustained amount of time
bending over.
Exactly. Now, whether that's in flower beds or in pots, it seems to be, even if it's with pots, if you go and move a pot, the amount of people that I've had, you know, roaring on the phone, oh God, I can't move, because a back injury is very immobilising when it happens. It's very debilitating. Even just to put on your shoes and tie your laces can be difficult. So some of the tips are, like, I always try to say to people, the best thing you can do is try avoid the trouble. So this time of year, when people are doing up their pots late this year now, because the weather hasn't been so great, rather than filling a big pot with stones at the end and earth all the way up, maybe put a bit of aeroboard or something in the bottom and only put soil halfway, so the pot itself isn't as heavy. So when you want to go moving it, you're not moving this horrendous weight, even just to move it a foot, because you haven't positioned it exactly where you want.
Okay, so the problems can arise from people trying to lift heavy pots.
Lift heavy pots, or even, say, if you have a garden where you have flower beds where they're doing bits of weeding, and they're bent over for a long time, and they're down on their knees, leaning into a flower bed, and you spend an hour doing it, you look back, you've great work, and then you go to get up and, oh Lord, I can't come up out of this. Because of the back, and or because of the knees. So because it's a fierce physical activity, it can cause problems when the weather gets good, because people all of a sudden take at it with gusto. And I think that's where the problem arises. If we could garden all year round, we wouldn't have the trouble.
Yeah, so it's actually, by coincidence, last week I did a piece about how gardening is so good for you, and it is good for you.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, that's why I say I'm out there myself on a November day to get out in the fresh air, and the physical exercises of it is good. We had big research out only in the last week or 10 days from DCU, 147,000 people followed over 30 years, questioned every 2 years. And they found that resistance training, which is kind of up and down and lunging and squats, so moving body weight, is actually the best way to have a healthy and long life.
Yeah, well, that's great to hear. Yeah.
Do you know, so gardening is a way to do that.
Yeah.
And you have the benefits of the flowers afterwards.
But mind your back.
And but mind your back when you're doing
and
it.
And don't be lifting heavy pots.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm just thinking out loud, Karina, about this time of year. I suppose you'd probably see more golfers than usual with injuries, would you, in the summer?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people who, they don't bother with the golf in the bad weather. And then when they went, no, I don't know about the weather. If you look out, we had a fire the other night in our house. But the long evenings certainly make people go out. So they've sat maybe at a desk all day and they say, it's bright until 10 o'clock. I'll go out at 6 o'clock and play 9 holes. Having sat behind a desk and not moved from maybe 9 o'clock in the morning. And all of a sudden they're twisting and bending and twisting and bending over 9 or 18 holes. And that's when injuries occur, because they don't really have, I suppose, a time for the warm up that they should be doing. And they haven't been walking around for long enough. If you come away from the desk at 5 o'clock and you're on the first tee box 3/4 of an hour later, I would say, unless you have conditioned yourself for it, you might be asking for trouble.
So how would you get around that? So, Karina, if you are somebody who likes to play golf after work or any other sport, should you be trying to move around during
the
day?
You should certainly be trying to move around during the day in the office. Just get up and stand and move, because we really don't. We really are glued to the desk and to the laptop from dawn until dusk now. And more so even meetings. The option is, do you want to do that online? Which keeps people glued to the desk, you know, rather than walking down the corridor to someone else's office. And so they're spending a lot more time in the sitting position, which is creating, I suppose, a recipe for disaster. Particularly, I think back pain is the thing more than anything else that causes trouble. It certainly costs the state a lot more money than anything else. The treatment of back pain costs almost as much as the treatment of cancer.
Really?
Yes.
In this country?
Yes. Yes.
Good
yes.
Lord. And what other ways do people put their backs out apart from sport and gardening?
Gardening, you don't have to be, I suppose, a sports person. You know, if you are in a sustained sitting position at a desk and you move quickly in the wrong direction and you haven't done a kind of strength and resistance training, your body is deconditioned. I would say that people need to do, generally speaking, more exercise, because people don't, we drive to the closest point now.
We want to park outside the shop instead of walking from the car park.
Exactly. And so overall, people are a lot less fit than they were. I think everyone will be familiar with the 10,000 steps a day, and our phone does that for us now. If anyone has an iPhone, they will tell you how many steps you've taken every day. I don't like to tell people it's actually not quite as high as 10,000 recommended. It's only 7 now that they have done a bit of research on it, because the more you do, the better. But we do need to do some other type of training, not just, that's aerobic training. So that's just generally keeping your muscles conditioned and well. We need to add in now, and we know this from studies that have been done, what they call resistance training. And what that is people will see, you know, in the centre aisle in Lidl or Aldi or in a lot of the supermarkets or shops, resistance bands. They're kind of elastic bands that you do exercise with. Or little dumbbells and weights. Now, you don't even have to go that far to having equipment. I tell people, get 2 tins of beans and you can do a weighted exercise, or you can use your body weight. Something as simple as a squat is what is considered resistance training.
And pressing from the wall.
Put your 2 hands up on the wall and push yourself back. So it's like a push-up, but against the wall, but you're using a body weight. Lunge is a very good one. People ask me, what's a lunge? Now, people who go to the gym will know what a lunge is, but I have a neighbour who is on in years, and I was describing a lunge, and this is interesting now in your talk of old-fashioned, but she said to me, oh, it's like when you're late for mass. And I thought it describes perfectly what I was familiar with. This is where you run in the side because you're a little bit late and the priest may have started, and you give a half a genuflect.
That's a lunge. I better not laugh. I'll be in more trouble.
You better not say anything or I'll never be asked back. But yeah, that is a weight transfer from one limb to the other, and you straighten yourself back up. It's probably a half a lunge, but it's good enough for me.
It's better than nothing.
And it's way better than nothing. And I think, do it on both sides and away you go. You've done yourself a big favour.
You've done a little bit. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You mentioned the tins of beans there, Karina. And since you did, for the people who are at home now and they'd like to start somewhere, if you've the 2 tins of beans, what should you be doing with them? In each hand?
One in each hand, hold them down by your side and lift them slowly up as far as shoulder height and down.
And down.
Up again and down.
Okay.
And do it 10 times. And then bring the 2 tins of beans in front to you and go in front of you and go up as far as your face and then a little bit higher and look up at it
and down.
And down.
Yeah. I'm doing, yeah, I'm doing the actions here, folks.
Action shots. And like that kind of, that is very simple exercise. There's no excuse that you don't need any equipment. You know, well, you don't have beans. I do remember one time telling a fella to go home and put frozen peas on an ankle, and he rang an hour later going, I have no peas, but I've Brussels sprouts. Will they do? So it doesn't have to be beans, you know. The small, I'd start with the small tins, you know, the one that come in the three pack. And then if you want to increase it, if you find that too easy, get the bigger tin.
So you don't need fancy gym equipment?
Absolutely not. So there's no need for any of the fancy Lycra or weight, no.
Stuff from the Middle Island Little.
No, yeah.
So plenty of walking and lunges.
Plenty of walking, lunges, squats.
And get out the tins of beans.
And get out the tins of beans.
Well, you know, they're all very, that's all very common sense, and it's not going to cost you a halfpenny. Karina, I'm just thinking as well now, because it was interesting, I never thought about gardening, how gardening would lead to injuries that you would need to see, but it's obvious now. I'm just thinking about modern living. I presume, I think we touched on this the last time, that texting and phone use and just being on keyboards with our hands and the way it affects our wrists, you probably see a lot of injuries like that.
Absolutely. When I think of the wrist and people don't associate problems with the elbow with their hands, but actually tennis elbow, golfer's elbow, or elbow pain, if I'll call it that, lateral elbow pain, the outside of the elbow pain, actually comes from the movement of our wrist and hand as distinct from the bend of our elbow. So because people don't associate the movement of their hand with an elbow pain, they think, whatever happened to me there? It can be quite a sore and debilitating pain, like something as simple as lifting the weight of the kettle to make a cup of tea is really, really painful if you have a problem with your elbow. And again, most elbow problems come from repetitive use of a keyboard, from texting, or from keyboard work, or repetitive scrolling on the mouse, because it's your wrist and hand that's moving.
But you might feel the pain in the elbow.
But you feel the pain in another body part. Mm. You know, and I suppose that's the thing, to know where it's emerging from gets you more to the root cause rather than.
And what would you typically do with somebody who has those kind of injuries? Obviously, you'd treat them therapy.
You'll have to, like, obviously, well, they would need treatment for the actual problem. But I always think that the first thing you have to do is say, where is this coming from, and take corrective action there. There's not much point doing treatment on an ailing elbow if you don't correct the fact that the problem is that they're too much time on the keyboard, or they're too much time on the phone texting, or they're scrolling too much on the mouse. So you need to mitigate those factors also along with doing the treatment.
Yeah,
talk to them about
their lifestyle.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, interestingly, we have an elbow question already. Oh. We've a lot of questions, but this is one specifically about the elbow. This listener says, can you ask Karina, please, about an issue I have with my elbow? When I have to use my forefinger to raise the back of my shoe as I put it on, I get a sharp pain around the inner side of my left elbow. And also, if I use my left hand for support, I get a sharp pain and it feels weak.
The inner side of your elbow is where you have quite a big nerve running down along the inside. Now, people will be familiar with the funny bone. You know, if you wrap your elbow off anything, you'll say, oh, I hit my funny bone. The funny bone is actually a nerve. A colloquial term. So a pain or an injury there can be feel quite sharp because it's more of a nerve pain than it, we'll call it a tissue pain, for want of a better word. The movement of your fingers is governed from the point of your elbow, because all the tendons that attach from the elbow go down right to the tips of your fingers. So each one is like a pulley system. You have one for each of the fingers and then one for your wrist up and down. So if you're using your finger to pull on, all that tells us is which tendon at the top is causing the most of the trouble, or what insertion point. And the nerve runs inside that. That would explain how sharp the pain was. I would think that would be a sortable problem, but you should definitely go and have it seen.
Have it seen too.
Yeah.
This is a great question. A texter says, I've noticed an increase in people around the streets with rollators, but it seems that they are about 4 foot high and most people are bent over them. Do they not make rollators for people who are tall? Great question.
Yeah, yes, it is a very good question. They do, actually. You know, it's not a one-size-fits-all. It's a bit like the little punch holes that you have on crutches. They can be increased up and down. You know, and it should be sized accordingly. Normally, if somebody has a rollator, they will have got it through, say, you know, maybe district nurse or physiotherapist, or if it has come through the HSC. But even if it was bought privately, I would say it should be sized for that person. Now, you will have a situation where you have somebody who's reluctant to
use a rollator,
and it may be introduced. A very good friend of my whole family, 101 on the 5th of May.
Wow.
Reluctant.
Use a rollator?
Oh, for old people.
It's for old people, yeah. Oh, my goodness. Well, you know what? It was he or she?
She.
Well, I'd admire her.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But I have warned her, pride comes Mary before a fall. So I'm like, I'd sooner see you safe.
And in this case, literally a fall. Okay, Karina, we're going to take a break. We have questions for you. But just to say to listeners, Karina is a physiotherapist. She's based here in Tralee. She's in for Eamon this week. If you have a question that you think she might be able to help you with, and remember, we're not talking about viruses or coughs and colds or any of that. We leave that to Dr. Eamon. But if you're having problems with your bones or your muscles or anything like that, or you have just a general query about your back or your legs or whatever it might be that is giving you trouble, send it in now, 083 300 3300. You can also phone Brenda, who's taking the calls today, on 066 712 3666.
Medical Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 200 years of the Bon Secours mission.
Now, Karina, the hits just keep on coming. They're loving you today and they're bombarding you with questions, so we better get cracking. A lady in her 70s says her left leg swells occasionally but could be perfectly fine the next day. Is there any reason it's only one leg and not the other? I can't put my full weight on that leg since needing a walking stick for balance, but could be caused by a lack of exercise in general. I think she's maybe asking, could it be caused by a lack of exercise in general? So one swollen leg, one not swollen.
Most of the exercises we do on both our legs. So I would say a lack of exercise would probably cause the same swelling on both. So I'd have to say if it was one leg that was swelling and not the other, it's more likely to be a problem in that leg. Now, she doesn't say what part. It could be a hip, it could be a knee, it could be an ankle, it could be coming from somewhere else. But if she's having difficulty putting weight on it, I would say the kind of starting point would be to have a look at the joints and see. It might be something simple that strengthening the muscles around the hip or around the knee or around the ankle would actually help her mobility an awful lot. So I would say if it is one rather than the other, it would be unlikely to be deconditioning. It's more likely to be a specific source.
Okay. We have a 45-year-old lady who is in a lot of discomfort or has a lot of discomfort in her upper arms every morning upon waking, and it takes a while for it to settle. She's wondering what might that be.
Things that are in one side or the other are usually an injury. If you have something on both sides, it's usually coming more from a central problem. So she might have more of a problem with her neck or her upper back, because the nerves that go down your arms, that's actually the source point for them. So if it's going down both sides, the source point usually is something back to the middle. So I would say that she should definitely seek review about that and not be just presuming it's an arm problem. It's probably all the muscles that attach across your back and across your shoulders actually emerge from back there to go down your arms. So if it's both sides, it's more likely to be coming from that central kind of area.
Okay. We have a female in her 70s with carpal tunnel. Could Karina say something about this? Just tell people what carpal tunnel is. Anyway.
Carpal tunnel is a kind of a sensation of pins and needles that comes into people's hands. It is related to a problem locally around the wrist. It's a very unpleasant problem, actually. It's quite common in pregnant ladies, and it can happen just as time goes on with the tunnel of your wrist, your carpal bones or your wrist bones, and the tunnel is the area above that. And if there's swelling in that area, you've quite a lot of bones in the wrist, but the swelling has nowhere to go, so it causes pressure on the structures going into your hands, and that's what causes the pins and needles. There's splinting and things that you can do, though, especially at night, to reposition them to alleviate it. And it's not the problem it was years ago because the treatments have improved.
Okay, so there is help available.
Absolutely, there's help available, yeah.
Texter says, Deirdre, will you please ask Karina, I have a very bad pain in my neck and head now for the past 3 months. When I turn my neck from side to side, I have severe pain up my neck into my head, like a constant crick in my neck. What should I do? I'm having physio, but it's not improving.
It's difficult to say now without seeing something like that. But I mean, the gold standard for that type of neck pain can refer up the head or down the arm. So if it has been tracked back to the neck, or if you move your neck and it sends the pain elsewhere, I would say that is all undoubtedly the source of the trouble. Some of the time those type of problems are quite resistant to treatment and they take quite a long time to settle down, particularly if the pain is going up to the head, because the nerves are quite sensitive on relating, because you have to keep your head steady to be able to look out of your eyes to see the world around you. So the nerves in this area are quite sensitive. Otherwise, we'd be like one of those little dogs that you see on the back of a car that have their heads bobbing around. So the pain is the corollary of that. So you'll find that if you have a symptom, it is really quite shooting and quite severe. I would say to tough it out. 3 months sounds like a long time, and if you're not making progress, maybe it's time to go back, as they maybe go back to the GP and get a better pain relief. But they do take time to settle.
A listener is waiting on a knee replacement and has to stand 7 hours a day at work, 4 days a week, and is wondering, how can I ease the knee pain? Oh, God love them. That sounds tough.
That sounds very tough. Now, what I would say is the one thing that they do recommend now, particularly if you're waiting for a knee replacement or any kind of a joint replacement, is a thing called prehab. Now, everyone will be familiar with the term rehab. So rehabilitation, what you do, the exercises you do after you've had your joint replacement or any kind of an injury. But prehab are the exercises that you do before, and they are done ideally to have the tissue around the joint that is about to be replaced in the best possible condition before you have the operation, with the idea being that you have kind of some of the work done so that your rehabilitation will be easier afterwards. The gold standard for knee, we'll call it issues or surgery, would be what we mentioned earlier, things like the lunges and things like the squats. Now, squats are where you're just about to go, as if you bend your knees as if you're to sit on a seat, but as if someone is going to pull the seat from under you. So you don't quite connect with the chair. You hover a little bit and then you stand yourself back up. And actually, even though in the beginning it's almost counterintuitive, if they're sore, it nearly feels like you're making it worse in the short term because it can flare it up. In the longer term, if you push on through, actually it is quite beneficial, and certainly would be very beneficial with the idea of the surgery impending. And the more you do, the better your rehabilitation would be after.
Now, Chris has a question for you. Chris says, will you please ask Karina why physios now give stretching exercises, etc., rather than the deep massage to get the muscles back after bad injuries like breaks?
Well, I suppose it depends on the physio that you're attending. There's a lot of research coming out now about exercises and how tissues, you know, it's most benefit when it's to be stretched. I think some of the problem comes from just the limitation of physios that are available. So they try and give some element of self-control to people so that they feel, you know, if they're doing the exercise, they have control over their situation and over their rehab, rather than, you know, attending someone for a half an hour once a week and then they won't be seen for ages. At least in the meantime, you're working on the tissue and chugging things along, particularly if you've broken a bone or broke, and that kind of an injury requires ongoing and continuous care until you are back to where you want to be. But it's different schools of thought and different approaches to work. I'm a roll the sleeves up old fashioned girl myself. I was probably trained the old way, but I'm still going strong. So I must be doing something right.
A texter says, Karina, have you any exercises that you'd recommend to relieve tennis elbow?
Yes, the exercise for tennis elbow is if you straighten your arm out completely and you drop your wrist down as if you're leaving something fall out of your hand, and then you can give it a pull with the other hand into that position. So that's the stretch. You feel the stretch all along the front of your forearm if you're doing it properly.
Say that again. So you
put your hand straight out.
Okay.
You drop your wrist down as if you were dropping something onto the floor.
Okay.
Dangle your fingers.
So your arm is straight.
Straight. Wrist dangle drops down to the floor. Dangle. Catch with the other hand and give it a little pull, an extra pull into that position. And you'll feel the stretch along the front of your forearm.
What about people who are double jointed at the elbows?
It doesn't stretch very well because those people have what we call hypermobility. So their tissue is much more stretchy. It's harder on those actually.
Yeah.
But those people are the people that are supposed to even more resistance training.
Okay, that's me by the way. I'm double jointed in my elbow, so I should be doing loads of beans
for you.
Loads of beans. I'm going to stock up now. Here's another great one. This listener says they were standing on concrete for 5 hours at a recent match. God, it was a long match. I suspect there was two matches maybe. But this person says they were standing on concrete for 5 hours and their back is very painful since, and that was 4 weeks ago.
The surface that we stand, I suppose, you know, standing in sustained position no more than sitting in sustained position is really, can be very uncomfortable, because you have to remember, even though we're standing ourselves upwards, our muscles and tissues, something has to hold us up against gravity. Do you know, so if you're not used to standing, you're probably, for that amount of time, you're probably using muscles that you wouldn't use in that way for 5 hours. The surface does make some bit of a difference, not as much as you'd imagine. It's more likely to be the sustained standing than the surface you were standing on.
Okay, right. Caller wants to know, what is the time frame for recovery from glutes problems? Where are your glutes again? They're down your thighs, are they?
Oh, it's very glamorous. It's your backside.
What's your
basically
backside? Oh,
yeah,
side. Oh,
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's quite literally a pain in the ass now is what they have. It's the biggest muscle in the body. So it depends on what's wrong with it. But muscle tissue, once you get blood flowing into it, heals relatively quickly. There shouldn't be that much of a delay, particularly as it's the biggest one.
Yeah, weeks, months?
Depends on what's wrong with
Depends
it,
Depends on
I
what's
suppose.
Wrong,
yeah.
Okay.
But
so
I can say a pain in the ass is wholly unpleasant.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
Caller says, would you recommend any exercises for a slipped disc?
There's lots of exercises for a slipped disc, but it depends on which way it has slipped. So you'd be reluctant to kind of give exercises or to describe them without knowing that direction. But what I would say to you is that if you are somebody who uses Google in any way, the McKenzie program of exercises would be the kind of starting point for disc problems, and there would be more specific instructions related to whether the pain is left or right or central or middle. And that might be able to tailor. So McKenzie exercises are the recommended exercises, but they're different depending on which direction it has gone.
Okay. I can tell you, we could keep you here for another hour now, but because there's so many questions coming in. Listener says, but we won't, we'll finish up very quickly, I promise. Listener in her 60s has plantar fasciitis. She says, would you comment on swollen ankles and legs during very warm weather? I want to be ready for the next heat wave, and I've yet to find a sandal that doesn't kill me. So there's a lot in that question.
Sandals, I think when people are used to wearing shoes and wearing boots, they have a lot of, you have 26 bones in your feet. So if you have a shoe, it is the equivalent of almost putting a bandage around it. Everything is held together. If you come out of the shoe and into a sandal where you have a bit of a strap, and maybe the podiatrist is someone who would do this probably answer this question a little better, but all of a sudden there's very little support and we're depending on the ligaments and the tendons and the structures of our feet without the external support of a shoe to hold us up. And that's when foot problems seem to arise. I sometimes look at when I see the, you know, the flip-flops with the no support and the anything, I think, oh my God almighty, will they be able to walk in years to come?
Yeah.
I suppose, you know, you have to have good shoes under your feet or even a good sandal. I would say spend money and buy the best one that you can afford and at least then you have as much support as you can.
Yeah, because if you buy the cheap shoes, you'll be paying for it in physiotherapy.
Absolutely,
or
yeah.
Visits afterwards.
You certainly will, yeah.
Yeah, that's very good advice. And I suppose you'd agree with our podiatrist, Anne-Marie, that we shouldn't all be tottering around in high heels all the time either.
No, but it's hard to come away from the glamour, like, isn't it? We try.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. Listen, we better not keep you any longer. You have patients to see. Oh. And you were very kind to give up some of your Wednesday to fill in for Dr. Eamon and to answer so many questions and so many very varied questions. So we're so grateful. Thank you, Corina. And you might come back again and visit us.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
And
thanks, Deirdre.
You'll find Corina Evans, physiotherapist, on Strand Street in Tralee if you want to look her up. She comes highly recommended. We'll take a break.